Chapter 108. Machining brake drums and rotors. Brake drums. Cast iron drums. Brake drums are constructed of cast iron where the lining contacts the drum, with mild steel centers. The drum is drilled for the lug studs. Cast iron contains approximately 3% carbon, which makes the drum hard, yet brittle. For this reason, it is recommended that any pounding needed to remove drums be done on the center mild steel portion, which, due to its material characteristics, can take this force without damage. This 3% carbon content of the cast iron also acts as a lubricant, which prevents noise during braking. Also, the rubbing surface can be machined without the need of a coolant, as would be required if constructed of mild steel. Because of these properties, cast iron is used on the friction surface of all drums. See Figure 108-1. Aluminum drums. Even aluminum brake drums use cast iron for the friction surface area. Besides saving weight, aluminum brake drums transfer heat to the surrounding air faster than cast iron or steel. Machining brake drums and rotors. Brake drums and rotors are the major energy-absorbing parts of the braking system. Friction between the friction material and the drum or rotor creates heat. This heat is absorbed by the drum or rotor and travels from the friction surface to the remainder of the drum or rotor by heat convection. As energy continues to be absorbed, the drum or rotor increases in temperature. Airflow across the drum or rotor helps to dissipate the heat and keep the temperature rise under control. See Figure 108-2. Refer to Figure 108-1. Types of brake drums. Regardless of the design, all types use cast iron as a friction surface. Refer to Figure 108-2. The airflow through cooling vents helps brakes from overheating. Refer to Figure 108-3. Score drums and rotors often result in metal-to-metal contact. Brake drum and rotor damage. Besides wear, drums and rotors often experience damage to their friction surfaces. Because drum and rotor damage is caused by extremes of operation, it is most commonly found on front brakes, which experience more severe use than rear brakes. Scoring. Scoring is an extreme form of drum and rotor wear consisting of scratches, deep grooves, and a generally rough finish on the friction surface. See Figure 108-3. There are a number of causes for scoring, including the following. Number 1. The most common is brake linings that have worn to the point where rivet, lining table, or pad backing plate contacts the drum or rotor. Number 2. Certain friction materials are more likely to score drums and rotors than others, and glaze linings that have hardened from exposure to extreme heat can also cause scoring. Number 3. Drum brakes are more likely to become scored than disc brakes because their closed construction holds dirt, sand, and abrasive dust inside the friction assembly. This allows the contaminants to be scrubbed repeatedly between the linings and drum. Number 4. Severe drum scoring often results when metal parts of the friction assembly fatigue, break loose, and are trapped between the linings and drum. A scored drum or rotor will cause very rapid lining wear, often accompanied by a growling or a grinding noise, particularly if there is metal-to-metal contact between the shoe and drum or pad and rotor. Scoring can be machined out of a drum or rotor so long as the amount of metal removed is within the allowable limits. Refer to Figure 108-4. Cracked drums or rotors must be replaced. Refer to Figure 108-5. A heat-checked surface of a disc brake rotor. Tack tip. The tap test. Using a steel hammer, lightly tap a brake drum or rotor. It should ring if it is not cracked. If a dull thud is heard, the drum or rotor is likely cracked and should be replaced. Cracking. Cracks in a brake drum or rotor are caused by the stress of severe braking or an impact during an accident. See Figure 108-4. Generally, drums and rotors that have been previously machined are more susceptible to cracking than new parts. Cracks can appear anywhere on a drum or rotor, although on drums they are most often found near the bolt circle on the web, or at the open edge of the friction surface. Rotors generally crack first at the edge of their friction surfaces. Heat checking. A lesser form of drum and rotor cracking is called heat checking, which consists of many small, interlaced cracks on the friction surface. See Figure 108-5. These cracks typically penetrate only a few thousandths of an inch into the metal and seldom pass through the structure of the drum or rotor. Heat checking is usually caused by a driver who leaves one foot on the brake pedal while applying the accelerator with the other. Heat checking can also be caused by repeated heavy braking or numerous panic stops made in rapid succession. Light heat checking can often be machined away. In more severe cases, the drum or rotor must be replaced. Refer to Figure 108-6. These dark hard spots are created by heat that actually changes the metallurgy of the cast iron drum. Most experts recommend replacement of any brake drum that has these hard spots. Hard or chill spots. Earlier it was stated that cast iron drums and rotors are durable because the friction, heat, and pressure of braking cause a tough skin to form on their friction surfaces. However, if brake temperatures become too great, localized impurities in the metal can be burned away, altering the structure of the metal and causing hard spots, also called chill spots, to appear. Hard spots are roughly circular, bluish gold, glassy appearing areas on the friction surface. See Figure 108-6. Hard spots create a number of problems, including the following. They are harder than surrounding areas of the friction surface and do not wear at the same rate. Once the spots begin to stand out from the rest of the friction surface, they cause rapid brake lining wear. The friction coefficient of hard spots is less than that of surrounding areas, so braking power is reduced or becomes uneven. This can cause the brakes to chatter, or result in a hard or pulsating brake pedal. A drum or rotor is more likely to crack in the area of hard spots than elsewhere. Most vehicle manufacturers recommend that the drum or rotor should be replaced if hard spots are found. Brake drum distortion. To ensure smooth brake application without pedal pulsation or other problems, brake drum friction surfaces must remain a fixed position in relation to the shoes. In some cases, a position variation of less than a thousandth of an inch will create braking problems. Distortion puts the drum friction surfaces out of proper alignment with the shoes. Refer to Figure 108-7. Belmuth brake drum distortion. Tech tip. Storing drums and rotors. A common cause of distortion in new brake drums and rotors is improper storage. Drums and rotors should always be stored lying flat, they should never be stood on edge. Distortion of new drums and rotors is common, so they should be routinely checked before installation. Drum distortion. The friction surface of a brake drum in perfect condition is parallel to the axis of the axle and rotates in a precise circle centered on the axle or hub. All brake drums suffer from distortion during brake operation, but they usually return to their original shape once the brakes are released. When the friction surface does not return to its proper shape, is no longer parallel to the axle, or does not rotate in a precise circle around the axle, the drum is distorted. Belmuth drums. When an open edge of a brake drum friction surface has a larger diameter than the closed edge, the drum is suffering from Belmuth distortion. See Figure 108-7. Belmuth distortion is caused by poor drum rigidity combined with high heat and brake application force. Belmuth distortion occurs when a drum suffers mechanical fade and its open edge, unsupported by the drum web, expands more than its closed edge. When the brakes are applied harder to compensate for the fade, the shoes distort the open edge of the drum so far outward that the elastic limit of its metal is exceeded. Once this happens, the drum will not return to its original shape after it cools. Repeated occurrences of this process eventually cause the drum to take on a Belmuth shape. Belmuth distortion is especially common on wide drums and occurs when a drum has had too much metal machined from it. If new shoes are installed in a Belmouthed drum, brake fade and unusual lining wear will result. Out of round drums. Uneven heat distribution can sometimes cause out of round distortion, in which the drum radius varies when measured at different points around its circumference. See Figure 108-8. Out of round distortion can take place when a vehicle drives through a puddle after a series of hard stops and cold water splashed on the brakes causes rapid and uneven cooling of the drums. It can also result if the parking brake is firmly applied after a series of hard stops before the drums have had a chance to cool. In this case, the shoes extend out against the heat-expanded drum and prevent it from contracting to its original circular shape as it cools. Instead, the extended shoes force the drum into an out-of-round shape. The most common symptom of an out-of-round drum is a pulsating brake pedal when the brakes are applied at all speeds. Out-of-round drums can also cause a vibration or brake chatter at speeds above approximately 40 miles per hour, or 60 kilometers per hour. In more extreme cases, an out-of-round drum can result in erratic braking action and possibly cause the brakes to grab with every revolution of the wheel. Refer to Figure 108-8. Out-of-round brake drum distortion. Refer to Figure 108-9. Eccentric brake drum distortion. Eccentric drums. Eccentric distortion exists when the geometric center of the circle described by the brake drum friction surface is other than the center of the axle or the bolt circle of the drum web. See Figure 108-9. This type of distortion causes the drum to rotate with a cam-like motion. An eccentric drum will result in a pulsating brake pedal similar to that caused by an out-of-round drum. Refer to Figure 108-10. A straightedge can be used to check for brake drum warpage. Tech tip. The parking brake trick. Whenever attempting to diagnose a brake pedal pulsation, drive to a deserted area or parking lot and try stopping the vehicle using the parking brake. If a vibration occurs, the problem is due to a fault with the rear brakes. If a vibration does not occur except when using the service brakes, the problem is most likely due to a fault with the front brakes. Eccentric distortion is often caused by over-tightened or unevenly tightened lug nuts or bolts. Not only will this cause an immediate problem, but it can lead to additional problems later. If a vehicle is driven for an extended time with an eccentric drum, the linings may slowly wear the friction surface round again. However, as soon as tension on the lug nuts or bolts is released, the drum will relax back to its original shape, creating an out-of-round condition that was not apparent before the wheel was removed. Removing drums. Metal clips called Tinnerman nuts are installed at the factory to keep the brake drums from falling off during vehicle assembly. These clips can be removed and do not need to be reinstalled since the wheel lug nuts hold onto the brake drum. The first inspection step after removing a brake drum is to check it for warp age using a straight edge, as shown in Figure 108-10. A warp drum is often a source of vibration. A brake drum that is out of round can cause a brake pedal pulsation during braking. Note: to help diagnose if the front brakes or rear brakes are the cause of the vibration, try slowing the vehicle using the parking brake. If vibration occurs, the problem is due to the rear brakes. Refer to Figure 108-11. Discard diameter and maximum diameter are brake drum machining and wear limits. Tech tip: mark it to be sure. Most experts recommend that brake rotors, as well as drums and wheels, be marked before removing them for service. Many disc brake rotors are directional and will function correctly only if replaced in the original location. A quick and easy method is to use correction fluid. This alcohol-based liquid comes in small bottles with a small brush inside, making it easy to mark rotors with an L for left and an R for right. Correction fluid, also called whiteout or liquid paper, can also be used to make marks on wheel studs, wheels, and brake drums to help ensure reinstallation in the same location. Machine to versus discard. Brake drums can usually be machined a maximum of 0.060 of an inch, or 1.5 millimeters, oversize. For example, a 9.500 of an inch drum could wear or be machined to a maximum inside diameter of 9.560 of an inch, unless otherwise stamped on the drum. Most brake experts recommend that both drums on the same axle be within 0.010 of an inch, or 0.25 millimeters, of each other. The maximum specified inside diameter, abbreviated ID, means the maximum wear inside diameter. See Figure 108-11. Always leave at least 0.015 of an inch, or 0.4 millimeters, after machining, resurfacing, for wear. Many manufacturers recommend that 0.030 of an inch, or 0.8 millimeters, be left for wear. Reasons for equal drum inside diameter. There are several reasons why the service technician should check and make sure that both brake drums on the same axle are close to the same inside diameter. Reason 1. Since heat is generated by braking, if there is less material, larger inside diameter, the drum will tend to expand more rapidly than a drum with more material, smaller inside diameter. Reason 2. If one drum expands more than the drum on the other side of the vehicle, unequal braking forces result. Reason 3. The drum that is larger in inside diameter will expand away from the brake linings more than the other side. Refer to example on page 1258. Refer to Figure 108-12. Most brake drums have a chamfer around the edge. If the chamfer is no longer visible, the drum is usually worn, or machined, to its maximum allowable inside diameter. Tech tip: brake drum chamfer. Look at the chamfer on the outer edge of most brake drums. When the chamfer is no longer visible, the brake drum is usually at or past its maximum inside diameter. See Figure 108-12. Although this chamfer is not an accurate gauge of the inside diameter of the brake drum, it still is a helpful indicator to the technician. Machining brake drums. Measuring a drum. Before measuring a brake drum, be sure it is not cracked by tapping it with a steel hammer. The brake drum should ring like a bell. If the brake drum makes a dull thud sound, discard the drum. Brake drums are usually measured using a micrometer especially designed for brake drums. See Figure 108-13. Compare the micrometer reading to the discard diameter. Both drums should be measured whenever they are removed for any brake service or inspection. Machining a drum procedure. Always start any machining operation by making certain that the brake drum is clean and that excess grease is removed from the hub. If the drum has a hub with bearings, check the outer bearing races, cups, for wear and replace as necessary before placing the drum on the brake lathe. Also, carefully inspect and clean the lathe spindle shaft and cones before use. Use a self-aligning spacer, SAS, to be assured of even force being applied to the drum by the spindle nut. Always follow the instructions for the lathe you are using. Hubless drums use a hole in the center of the brake drum for centering. Always check that the center hole is clean and free of burrs or nicks. Typical drum brake machining steps include the following. Step 1. Mount the drum on the lathe and install the silencer band as shown in figures 108-14 and 108-15. Step 2. Turn the drum by hand before turning on the lathe to be sure everything is clean. Advance the tool bit manually until it just contacts the drum. This is called a scratch cut. See figure 108-16. Step 3. Stop the lathe and back off the tool bit. Loosen the arbor nut, rotate the drum one half turn, or 180 degrees, on the arbor, and retighten the arbor nut. See figure 108-17. Turn the lathe on and make a second scratch cut. A. If the scratch cuts are side by side, the lathe is okay and machining can begin. And B. If the scratch cuts are opposite, remove the drum and check for nicks, burrs, or chips on the mounting surfaces. Step 4. Start the lathe and set the depth of the cut. See figure 108-18 and 108-19. The maximum rough cut depends on the lathe type. The minimum cut is usually specified as no less than 0.002 inch, 0.05 millimeters. A shallower cut usually causes the tool bit to slide over the surface of the metal rather than cut into the metal. See figure 108-20 for an example of a drum machine without properly positioning the anti-catter, or vibration, strap. Refer to figure 108-13. A digital drum micrometer makes measuring brake drums easily and accurately. Refer to figure 108-14. Figure A, a rotor or brake drum with a bearing hub should be installed on a brake lathe using the appropriate size collet that fits the bearing cups, or races. Figure B, a hubless rotor or brake drum requires a spring and a tapered centering cone. A face plant should be used on both sides of the rotor or drum to provide support. Refer to figure 108-15. A self-aligning spacer should always be used between the drum or rotor and the spindle retaining nut to help ensure an even clamping force and to prevent the adapters and cone from getting into a bind. A silence band should always be installed to prevent turning tool chatter and to ensure a smooth surface finish. Refer to figure 108-16. After installing a brake drum on the lathe, turn the cutting tool outward until the tool just touches the drum. This is called a scratch cut. Refer to figure 108-17. After making a scratch cut, loosen the retaining nut, rotate the drum on the lathe, and make another scratch cut. If both cuts are in the same location, the drum is installed correctly on the lathe and drum machining can begin. Refer to figure 108-18. Set the depth of the cut indicator to zero just as the turning tool touches the drum. Disc brake rotors. Disc brake rotors use cast gray iron at the area that contacts the friction pad. Rotors, also called discs or discs, have mass, or weight, that absorbs heat. The heavier the rotor, the more heat can be absorbed. Vehicle downsizing has resulted in the use of thinner and lighter weight rotors. As the weight of the rotor decreases, the less heat the rotor can store or absorb, resulting in the rotor getting hotter. As the rotor gets hotter, the rotor expands and grows larger where it is the hottest. If the rotor is allowed to cool gradually, the rotor simply returns to its original shape. If, however, the rotor is exposed to water, it may cool rapidly, causing the rotor to distort. Refer to figure 108-19. This lathe has a dial that is diameter graduated. This means that a reading of 0.030 inch indicates a 0.015 inch cut that increases the inside diameter of the brake drum by 0.030 inch. Refer to figure 108-20. Notice the chatter marks at the edge of the friction area surface of the brake drum. These marks were caused by vibration of the drum because the technician failed to wrap the dampening strap, or silencer band, over the friction surface portion of the brake drum. Styles or rotors. Rotors are made in several styles, including the following. Number 1. Solid. These are used on the rear of many vehicles equipped with rear disc brakes and on the front of some small and mid-size vehicles. Solid rotors are usually used on the rear where only 20% to 40% of the braking occurs. Solid rotors are much thinner than vented rotors. See Figure 108-21 for an example of an excessively worn solid rotor. Number 2. Vented. These are used on the front of most vehicles. The internal vanes allow air to circulate between the two friction surfaces of the rotor. Rotors can either be straight vane design, as shown in Figure 108-22, or directional vane design, as shown in Figure 108-23. Refer to Figure 108-21. This excessively worn, thin, rotor was removed from the vehicle in this condition. It is amazing that the vehicle was able to stop with such a thin rotor. Refer to Figure 108-22. Severely worn vented disc brake rotor. The braking surface has been entirely worn away, exposing the cooling fins. The owner brought the vehicle to a repair shop because of the little noise in the front. Notice the straight vane design. Refer to Figure 108-23. Directional vane vented disc brake rotors. Note that the fins angle toward the rear of the vehicle. It is important that this type of rotor be reinstalled on the correct side of the vehicle. Composite rotors. Composite rotors use a steel center section with a cast iron wear surface. These composite rotors are lighter in weight than conventional cast iron rotors. See Figure 108-24. The light weight of composite rotors makes them popular with vehicle manufacturers. However, technicians should be aware that full contact adapters that simulate the actual wheel being bolted to the rotor must be used when machining composite rotors. If composite rotors are machined incorrectly, they must usually be replaced. Refer to Figure 108-24. Typical composite rotor that uses cast iron friction surfaces and a steel center section. Aluminum metal matrix composite rotors. Some disc brake rotors are manufactured from an aluminum metal matrix composite alloy reinforced with 20% silicon carbide particulate. Aluminum composites combine the lightweight and thermal conductivity of aluminum with the stiffness and wear resistance of a ceramic to create a disc brake rotor with excellent heat dissipation and service life. These rotors can be distinguished from conventional cast iron rotors in several ways. At first glance, the rotors are silver gray with a dark gray or black transfer layer from the brake pad on the rubbing surface. Unlike cast iron, these rotors will show no signs of rust and are non-magnetic. When removed from the vehicle, the aluminum composite rotors can be further distinguished by their light weight, usually under 6 pounds, or 2.7 kilograms, versus over 12 pounds, or 5.4 kilograms, for cast iron rotors on the typical passenger vehicle. Servicing these rotors is slightly different from cast iron rotors. The dark transfer layer on the rubbing surface does not harm rotor performance and should not be removed unless the rotor needs to be machined due to being warped. Aluminum composite disc brake rotors cannot be machined with steel cutting tools. Carbide tools can be used to machine a single set of aluminum composite rotors. If a shop receives these rotors on a regular basis, a polycrystalline diamond tip tool is a good investment. Although more expensive initially, the polycrystalline diamond tool can last 100 times longer than a carbide tool. Disc brake rotor distortion. Causes of rotor distortion. The friction surfaces of a rotor in perfect condition are perpendicular to the axle centerline and have no side-to-side movement. Unlike brake drums, rotors do not suffer distortion as a routine part of brake operation. However, distortion can occur during braking if there is a problem with the friction assembly, such as a frozen caliper piston that creates unequal application force on the two sides of the rotor. Friction surface distortion is much more significant in a disc brake rotor than in a brake drum because the design of the friction assembly magnifies the effect of any wear. The hydraulic principles dictate that small movements of the large pistons in the brake calipers are converted into large movements of the small pistons in the master cylinder. Even very small amounts of distortion in a disc brake rotor can cause large amounts of pedal pulsation. Refer to Figure 108-25. This Porsche is equipped with high-performance brakes including cross-drilled brake rotors. Frequently asked question. What does cross-drilled and slotted mean? The terms cross-drilled and slotted refer to two separate processes. The first procedure involves drilling rows of holes through the friction surfaces of the rotor. The second procedure refers to milling a series of specially machined grooves from the center of the disc toward the edge. When the friction surfaces of a rotor are smooth and flat, there is no means of escape for the gases and dust, which build up between pad and rotor. This is not a huge problem in normal driving, but is an important consideration in street performance applications. The drill holes, which are sometimes called gas relief openings, provide an exit route for the dust and gas. The holes are also commonly labeled cooling holes because of the improvements they make in this area. Better cooling means less fade during repeated heavy brake application. They also help dissipate water when driving in poor weather. See Figure 108-25. Slotting increases the bite of the pads and is even more effective than cross-drilling in combating the problem known as outgassing. This is when, at very high braking temperatures, the bonding agents used in some brake pads produce a gas. Under extreme conditions, this gas can create a gas cushion between pad and rotor, giving a driver a normal pedal feel but reducing the amount of friction being generated. The slots pump away gas and restore full contact. The micro-shaving effect of the slots also serves to deglaze the pads, and this is why the edges of the slots are not chamfered or radiused. It also tends to even out the wear across the brake pad faces, increasing the effective contact area. Refer to Figure 108-26. Brake rotor lateral runout distortion. Refer to Figure 108-27. Before measuring lateral runout with a dial indicator, gauge, remove any wheel bearing end play by tightening the spindle nut to 10 to 20 foot-pounds with a torque wrench. This step helps prevent an inaccurate reading. If the vehicle is to be returned to service, be sure to loosen the spindle nut and retighten to specifications, usually, finger tight, to restore proper bearing clearance. Rotor lateral runout. Lateral runout, often abbreviated LRO, is side-to-side wobble of the rotor as it rotates on the spindle. See Figure 108-26. A small amount of runout provides caliper piston knockback that reduces drag when the brakes are not applied. However, if the amount of runout is too great, excessive brake pedal travel and front-end vibration, felt in the steering wheel, will result. In cases of severe runout, a pulsating brake pedal may also be present. Lateral runout can be caused by several factors. Over-tightened or unevenly tightened lug nuts or bolts are a common source of runout on newer vehicles with downsized brake rotors. Extreme heat or rapid temperature variations also cause runout. Inaccurate machining at the factory or in the field is also a common cause of this distortion. Most maximum values range between 0.003 and 0.008 of an inch, or 0.05 and 0.20 millimeters. See Figures 108-27 and 108-28. Rotor lack of parallelism. Lack of parallelism, also called thickness variation, is a variation in the thickness of the rotor when it is measured at several places around its circumference. See Figure 108-29. A rotor with friction surfaces that are not parallel is the most common disc brake cause of a pulsating brake pedal. A lack of rotor parallelism will cause a pedal pulsation when the brakes are applied at all speeds and can also cause front-end vibration during braking. See Figure 108-30. Lack of parallelism can be caused by a soft spot in the rotor casting that wears more rapidly than surrounding areas, but the most common cause is rust buildup on the rotor when the vehicle is not driven for an extended period. The part of the friction surface protected by the brake pads does not rust as much as the rest of the rotor, and because the rusted areas wear faster, this results in a thickness variation when the vehicle is driven again. Because parallelism variation is much more likely to cause a problem than lateral runout, the maximum amount allowed is much smaller than for runout. Most manufacturers specify that the two friction surfaces of a rotor must be parallel within half a thousandth of an inch, 0.0005 of an inch, or 0.013 millimeters, or less. Refer to Figure 108-28. Figure A. Rotate the disc brake rotor one complete revolution while observing the dial indicator, gauge. Figure B. Most vehicle manufacturers specify a maximum runout of about 0.003 of an inch, or 0.08 millimeters. Refer to Figure 108-29. Brake rotor lack of parallelism distortion. Tech tip. Braking vibration could be due to the tires. A vibrating condition, or roughness, during braking is usually caused by disc brake rotor thickness variation or an out-of-round brake drum. Both conditions should be investigated. However, the tires and/or road conditions can also cause the same vibrations. Tests performed by vehicle and tire manufacturing engineers have shown that tires, and tires alone, could be the cause. If no other problem can be isolated, install a different brand of tire on the vehicle and retest. The cause of the tire vibration seems to be due to distortion or movement of the tire tread. A different brand of tires would have a different tread rubber compound, carcass body ply angles, or other factor that can contribute to a vibration during braking. Refer to Figure 108-30. Figure A, disc brake rotor thickness variation, or parallelism. Figure B, the rotor should be measured with a micrometer at four or more equally spaced locations around the rotor. Tech tip. Think of a human hair. Measurements and specifications do not seem to mean much unless you can visualize the size compared to something with which you are familiar. The diameter of a human hair is from 0.002 to 0.004 of an inch, or 2 to 4 thousandths of an inch. The maximum lateral run out of a rotor is usually within this same dimension. The reason a dial indicator has to be used to measure run out, and a micrometer to measure parallelism, is that the dimensions involved are less than the diameter of a human hair. Carbon ceramic rotors. Description. Carbon ceramic brake, abbreviated CCB, rotors are used on some high-performance vehicles and are very expensive. Carbon ceramic rotors are used as standard or optional equipment on vehicles such as Aston Martin, Audi, Bentley, Bugatti, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Mercedes-Benz, and Porsche, as well as on the 2009 plus Corvette ZR1. Refer to Figure 108-31. A carbon ceramic brake rotor on a Ferrari. Construction. Carbon ceramic brake rotors are made of a carbon fiber reinforced ceramic silicon carbide material. The main ingredient is silicon carbide, which provides the hardness, and the other major ingredient, carbon fiber, provides the strength to the rotors. When the rotors are made, carbon fibers are blended with a resin that is carbon and silicon. The mixture is pressed into a mold to form the rotor and then heated to about 3000 degrees Fahrenheit, or 1650 degrees Celsius, which converts the resin to silicon carbide, which is the ceramic in the carbon ceramic rotor. Advantages. The advantages of carbon ceramic brake rotors include the following. Low weight, this improves vehicle performance and handling. Corrosion and wear resistant, this means that the rotor should not need to be replaced during the life of the vehicle. Service procedures. Carbon ceramic brake rotors cannot be machined or serviced. The brake pads used with carbon ceramic rotors are special, and any other pads other than the specified brake pad should be used. During service, if needed, the rotor is weighed and if under the minimum specified weight, must be replaced. See Figure 108-31. Disc brake rotor thickness. Most rotors have a minimum thickness cast or stamped into the rotor. This thickness is minimum wear thickness. At least 0.015 of an inch, or 0.4 millimeters, must remain after machining to allow for wear. Some vehicle manufacturers, such as General Motors, specify that 0.030 of an inch, or 0.8 millimeters, be left for wear. See Figure 108-32. Whenever machining, or resurfacing, a rotor, an equal amount of material must be removed from each side. Refer to Figure 108-32. A digital readout rotor micrometer is an accurate tool to use when measuring a rotor. Both fractional inches and metric millimeters are generally available. When the rotor should be machined. According to brake design engineers, a worn rotor has a very smooth friction surface that is ideal for replacement, new, disc brake pads. Often when the rotors are machined, the surface finish is not as smooth as specified. Therefore, a rotor should be machined only if one of the following conditions exists. Number 1. Grooves deeper than 0.060 of an inch, or 1.5 millimeters. This is the approximate thickness of a nickel. See Figure 108-33. Number 2. Thickness variation exceeding specifications and a brake pedal pulsation complaint. Number 3. Heavy rust that has corroded the friction surface of the rotor. See Figures 108-34 and 108-35. Therefore, if there is no complaint of a pulsating brake pedal during braking and the rotor is not deeply grooved or rusted, it should not be machined. New disc brake pads perform best against a smooth surface, and a used disc brake rotor is often smoother than a new rotor. Rotor finish. The smoothness of the rotor is called rotor finish or surface finish. Surface finish is measured in units called microinches. 1 microinch equals 0.000001 of an inch, or 0.025 micrometer. The finish classification of microinch means the distance between the highest peaks and the deepest valley. The usual method of expressing surface finish is the arithmetic average roughness height, abbreviated RA, which is the average of all peaks and valleys from the mean, or average, line. This surface finish is measured using a machine with a diamond stylus, as shown in Figure 108-36. Another classification of surface finish that is becoming obsolete is the root mean square, abbreviated RMS. The RMS method gives a slightly higher number and can be obtained by multiplying RA times 1.11 equals RMS. Often, a machined rotor will not be as smooth as a new rotor, resulting in a hard stopping complaint after new brakes have been installed. A rough rotor has less surface area touching the new brake pads, resulting in a hard brake pedal and reduced braking effectiveness. Most new rotors have a surface finish of 45 to 60 microinches RA. The higher the RA of a rotor, the rougher the surface finish. The lower the RA number, the smoother the surface finish. Refer to Figure 108-33. If a fingernail catches on a groove in the rotor should be machined. Refer to Figure 108-34. This rusted rotor should be machined. Refer to Figure 108-35. Rotors that have deep rust pockets usually cannot be machined. Refer to Figure 108-36. Electronic surface finish machine. The reading shows about 34 inches. This is a very smooth rotor and is suitable for use with any brake pad. Tech tip. The ballpoint pen test. A smooth friction surface on a drum or rotor is necessary for proper brake operation. To quickly determine if the friction surface of a brake drum or rotor is not smooth enough, draw a ballpoint pen across the surface. If the surface is smooth enough, a solid ink line will be observed. If the line drawn by the pen is not solid, then the surface is not smooth enough. Qualifying a brake lathe. Purpose of qualifying a brake lathe. All brake lathes should be checked regularly to make sure that they are in good condition and are capable of machining brake drums and rotors accurately. Qualifying procedure. To qualify a brake lathe, use the following generic checklist. Step 1. Check for proper operation and that all motors, switches, and feed controls that engage and disengage levers function properly. Step 2. Make sure radius cones, bell clamps, and taper cones are free of all nicks, burrs, rust, and foreign debris. To restore flatness, use an 80 grit silicon carbide hone and WD-40 lubricant. Apply light pressure using short figure 8 movements to prevent rounding of the edges. Step 3. Check the tapered surfaces on the arbor and spindle to ensure these surfaces are totally free of any contamination. The arbor should not run out over 2/1000ths of an inch total indicator runout. Step 4. The shoulder of the arbor must also be free of nicks or debris. Spray the shoulder of the arbor with WD-40 and use the arbor shaft for a guide to hold the hone perpendicular to the shoulder. Turn the lathe on and hone the shoulder. Apply pressure on the hone with a finger on the arbor. Step 5. Check fit of the rotor truer and the top of the dovetail way. A 1/1000ths feeler gauge should not be able to fit between the top dovetail surface and the bottom of the rotor. Remove the rotor truer and hone the top dovetail surface and the bottom of the rotor truer until the feeler gauge stock cannot be inserted. Step 6. The tool bit holder slots on the rotor truer should be clean. Make sure the bottom of the tool bit holder is also clean. The tool bit holder bottom can be cleaned by rubbing it on a hone or a single cut file. The carbide bit seat on the tool bit holder should be clean and flat. If the surface is not flat, replace the tool bit holder. Step 7. All end bell clamps can be remachined to reduce runout. Mount the bell clamp with the machined hub mating with the shoulder of the arbor. Use the two small radius adapters next on the arbor and space out to the threads with available radius adapters or 1-inch spacer. Tighten the arbor nut. Put a reference mark on the bell clamp that lines up with the two marks on the spindle and arbor. Machine the face of the bell clamp with the rotor truer. True all four bell clamps. Step 8. Always align the inside bell clamp with the reference mark put on the hub after machining the bell clamp. Keep all mounting surfaces clean and occasionally check accuracy of setup by holding the inside bell clamp and rotating the rotor 180. Reclamp and check with the dial indicator. If runout is excessive, hone the adapter. If runout persists, remachine the adapter. Step 9. The inside of the hat section of the rotor must be cleaned of all rust, burrs, and any foreign matter. If any debris is present on this surface, the rotor will not reference properly while machining. Step 10. All surfaces of the lathe, arbor, and all of the adapter surfaces must be free of nicks, burrs, and foreign debris. Note: always follow the lathe manufacturer's specific operating and maintenance instructions. Refer to Figure 108-37. A dial indicator being used to check the arbor for total indicator runout. Brake lathe. Machining a disc brake rotor. Before machining a rotor, be sure that it can be machined by comparing the minimum thickness specification and the measured thickness of the rotor. Many lathes are capable of removing a large amount of material in one pass, thereby reducing the time necessary to refinish a rotor. These lathes usually use a positive rake tool bit angle. See Figure 108-38. Other lathes that use six-sided reversible tool bits usually use a negative rake tool bit angle. AMCO is an example of a negative rake lathe, whereas Perfect Hofmann and AccuTurn are examples of positive rake lathes. Caution: some original equipment and replacement disc brake rotors are close to the minimum allowable thickness when new. Often, these rotors cannot be safely machined at all. Following is an example of the steps necessary to machine a disc brake rotor. Always follow the instructions for the equipment you are using. Number 1. Mount the disc brake rotor to the spindle of the lathe using the cones and adapters recommended. See figures 108-39 and 108-40. Number 2. Install the rotor damper and position the cutting tools close to the rotor surface, as shown in figure 108-41. Note: failure to install the damper causes vibrations to occur during machining that creates a rough surface finish. Number 3. Make a scratch cut on the rotor face, as shown in figure 108-42. Number 4. To check that the rotor is mounted correctly, loosen the retaining nut, turn the rotor 1/2 turn, or 180 degrees, and retighten the nut. Make another scratch cut. A. The second scratch cut should be side by side with the first scratch cut if the rotor is properly installed, as shown in figure 108-43. And B. If the second scratch cut is on the opposite side, or 180 degrees, from the first scratch cut, the rotor may not be installed on the lathe correctly. Note: the runout as measured with a dial indicator on the brake lathes should be the same as the runout measured on the vehicle. If the runout is not the same, the rotor is not installed on the brake lathe correctly. After proper installation of the disc brake rotor on the brake lathe, proceed with machining the rotors. For best results, do not machine any more material from the rotor than is absolutely necessary. Always follow the recommendations and guidelines as specified by the vehicle manufacturer. Refer to figure 108-38. Most positive rake brake lathes can cut any depth in one pass, thereby saving time. A typical negative rake lathe uses a three-sided turning tool that can be flipped over, thereby giving 6 cutting edges. Rough cut. A rough cut on a lathe involves cutting 0.005 of an inch per side with a feed of 0.008 of an inch per revolution and 150 RPM spindle speed. This usually results in a very coarse surface finish of about 150 microinches RA. Finish cut. A finish cut means removing 0.002 inch per side with a feed of 0.002 of an inch per revolution and 150 RPM spindle speed. Although this cut usually looks smooth, the surface finish is about 90 to 100 microinches RA. Even a typical finish cut is still not nearly as smooth as a new rotor. Note: measure the thickness of the rotor after the finish cut and compare with manufacturer's specifications. Be sure to allow for wear. See chart 108-1 for a metric fractional measurement chart. Non-directional finish. Most vehicle and brake component manufacturers recommend a non-directional finish to help prevent the grooves machined into the rotor from acting like record grooves that can force the pads to move outward while the rotor rotates. Caution: some non-directional finish tools, such as those that use Scotch-Brite, a registered trademark, plastic pads often do not make the rotor as smooth as new, even though the finish has been swirled. See figure 108-44. Surface finishing the rotor. The goal of any brake repair or service should be to restore the braking effectiveness to match new vehicle brakes. This means that the rotor finish should be as smooth or smoother than a new rotor for maximum brake pad contact. Research conducted at Delphi has shown that like new rotor finish can easily be accomplished by using a block and sandpaper. After completing the finish cut, place 150 grit aluminum oxide sandpaper on a block and apply steady pressure against the rotor surface for 60 seconds on each side of the rotor. See figure 108-45. The aluminum oxide is hard enough to remove the highest ridges left by the lathe cutting tool. This results in a surface finish ranging from 20 to 80 inches and usually less than 40 inches, which is smoother than a new rotor. See figure 108-46. Note: many commercial rotor finish products may also give a smoother surface finish. See figures 108-47 and 108-48. 1268. Always compare rotor finish to the rotor finish of a new rotor. Microinch finish is often hard to distinguish unless you have a new rotor with which to compare. Refer to figure 108-39. Recommended adapters and location for machining hubbed and hubless rotors. Refer to figure 108-40. A composite rotor properly mounted on a brake lathe. Refer to figure 108-41. A damper is necessary to reduce cutting tool vibrations that can cause a rough surface finish. Refer to figure 108-42. After installing the rotor on the brake lathe, turn the cutting tool in just enough to make a scratch cut. Refer to Figure 108-43. After making a scratch cut, loosen the retaining nut and rotate the rotor on the spindle of the lathe 1/2 turn. Tighten the nut and make a second scratch cut. The second scratch cut should be side by side with the first scratch if the rotor is installed correctly on the brake lathe. Refer to Figure 108-44. Figure A. This technician uses two sanding blocks each equipped with 150 grit aluminum oxide sandpaper. Figure B. With the lathe turned on, the technician presses the two sanding blocks against the surface of the rotor after the rotor has been machined to achieve a smooth micro-inch surface finish. Most experts recommend washing the rotor with soap and water to remove the grit from the sanding operation from the fine grooves in the rotor before they are installed on the vehicle. Refer to Figure 108-45. Figure A. After machining and sanding the rotor, it should be cleaned. In this case, brake cleaner from an air pressurized spray can is used. Figure B. With the lathe turning, the technician stands back away from the rotor and sprays both sides of the rotor to clean it of any remaining grit from the sanding process. This last step ensures a clean, smooth surface for the disc brake pads and a quality brake repair. Sanding each side of the rotor surface for 1 minute using a sanding block and 150 grit aluminum oxide sandpaper after a finish cut gives the rotor the proper smoothness and finish. Refer to Chart 108-1. Metric fractional chart. Refer to Figure 108-46. A grinder with sandpaper can be used to give a smooth non-directional surface finish to the disc brake rotor. Refer to Figure 108-47. The correct final surface finish should be smooth and non-directional. Figure 108-48. Rust should always be cleaned from both the rotor and the hub whenever the rotors are machined or replaced. An air-powered die grinder with a sanding disc makes quick work of cleaning this hub. Refer to Figure 108-49. A typical hub mount on the vehicle lathe. This particular lathe oscillates while machining the rotor, thereby providing a smooth and non-directional finish at the same time. Tech tip. Turn or machine? When asked about what was done to their vehicle, a common response of customers is "they rotated my rotors." Many customers do not understand the terms that are commonly used in the vehicle service industry. Try to use terms that are technically correct and avoid slang when talking to customers. For example, the expression "machine the rotors" indicates an operation, whereas the expression "turn the rotors" may be misinterpreted by some customers as simply meaning using your hand and moving, or rotating, the rotor. Resurfacing, refinishing, and reconditioning are other terms that could be used to describe a drum or rotor machining operation. On the vehicle rotor machining. Many vehicle manufacturers recommend on the vehicle machining for rotors if the disc brake rotor must be machined due to deep scoring or pulsating brake pedal complaint. This is especially true of composite rotors or for vehicles, such as many Honda vehicles, that require major disassembly to remove the rotors. Caliper mount. On the vehicle lathes require that the disc brake caliper be removed. The cutter attaches to the steering knuckle or caliper support in the same location as the caliper. See Figure 108-49. Hub mount. On the vehicle lathes attach to the hub using the lug nuts of the vehicle. To achieve a proper cut, the hub mount must be calibrated for any runout caused by the hub bearings and the outside surface face of the rotor. Note, all on the vehicle lathes require that the wheel be removed. For best results, always use a torque wrench when tightening lug nuts or lathe adapters. Unequal torque on the bolts causes stress and distortion that can cause warped rotors and a pulsating brake pedal. Tech tip. Always check the wheel studs. Before installing the wheel after brake service, check the condition of the wheel studs and lug nuts. Check for stripped threads, rust, or cracks. If necessary, replace the stud. Most studs are replaced by driving them out using a large hammer and then using washers and a lug nut to draw the serrated shoulder of the lug stud into the rotor stud hole. See Figure 108-50. Always use a torque wrench when installing lug nuts to ensure proper and even torque on all lug nuts. This helps to prevent rotor distortion, which can lead to vibration in the steering and/or pedal pulsation during braking. Refer to Figure 108-50. A wheel stud was replaced on the rotor hub assembly when it was discovered to be stripped. Drum machining. Step by step. Step 1. Before starting to machine a brake drum, check the drum for any obvious damage such as heat cracks or hard spots. Step 2. Lightly tap the drum. It should ring like a bell. If a dull thud is heard, the drum may be cracked and should be discarded. Step 3. Use a drum micrometer to measure the inside diameter of the drum and compare this measurement to specifications to be sure that the drum can be safely machined. Step 4. Most brake drums have the maximum inside diameter cast into the drum as shown. Step 5. Thoroughly clean the outside and inside of the drum. Step 6. Be sure the center hole in the drum is clean and free from any burrs that could prevent the drum from being properly centered on the shaft of the brake lathe. Step 7. A typical brake lathe used to machine drums. Step 8. Locate a tapered, centering cone that best fits inside the hole of the brake drum. Step 9. Slide the large face plate over the shaft of the brake lathe. Step 10. Slide the tapered centering cone onto the shaft with the spring between the face plate and the centering cone. Step 11. Slide the other face plate onto the shaft. Step 12. Install the self-aligning spacer, SAS, and left-hand thread spindle nut. Step 13. Tighten the spindle nut. Step 14. Loosen the turning bar retainer. Step 15. Carefully check the cutting bits and either rotate the bit to a new cutting point or replace it with a new part as necessary. Step 16. Turn the spindle control knob until the spindle is as short as possible, i.e., the drum as close to the machine as possible, to help reduce vibration as much as possible. Step 17. Position the cutting bar so that the cutting bit is located at the back surface of the drum. Step 18. Install the silencer band, vibration dampener strap. Step 19. Be sure the tool bit and clothing are away from the drum and turn the brake lathe on. Step 20. Center the bit in the center of the brake surface of the drum and rotate the control knob that moves the bit into contact with the drum friction surface. This should produce a light scratch cut. Step 21. Turn the lathe off. Step 22. Observe the scratch cut. Step 23. Loosen the spindle nut. Step 24. Rotate the drum 180 degrees, or, 1/2 turn, on the spindle. Step 25. Tighten the spindle nut. Step 26. Turn the lathe on, rotate the control knob, and run the cutter into the drum for another scratch cut. Step 27. Observe the scratch cut. If the second scratch cut is in the same place as the first scratch cut or extends all the way around the drum is correctly mounted on the lathe. Step 28. Adjust the depth gauge to zero when the cutter just touches the drum. Step 29. Run the cutter all the way to the back surface of the drum. Step 30. Adjust the depth of the cut and lock it in position by turning the lock knob. Most vehicle manufacturers recommend a rough cut depth should be 0.005 to 0.010 of an inch and a finish cut of 0.002 of an inch. Step 31. Select a fast feed rate if performing a rough cut, 0.006 to 0.016 of an inch per revolution, or 0.002 of an inch per revolution for a finish cut. Step 32. Turn the lock knob to keep the feed adjustment from changing. Step 33. Engage the automatic feed. Step 34. The drum will automatically move as the tool remains stationary to make the cut. Step 35. Turn the lathe off. Step 36. If additional material must be removed, proceed with the finish cut. Clean thoroughly before installing on a vehicle. Rotor machining. Step by step. Step 1. Before machining any rotor, use a micrometer and measure the thickness of the rotor. Step 2. Check the specifications for the minimum allowable thickness. Step 3. Visually check the rotor for evidence of heat cracks or hard spots that would require replacement, rather than machining, of the rotor. Step 4. After removing the grease seal and bearings, remove the grease from the bearing races. Step 5. Clean and inspect the brake lathe spindle for damage or burrs that could affect its accuracy. Step 6. Select a tapered cone adapter that fits the inner bearing race. Step 7. Slide the cone adapter onto the brake lathe spindle. Step 8. Select the proper size cone adapter for the smaller outer wheel bearing race. Step 9. Place the rotor onto the large cone adapter and then slide the small cone adapter into the outer wheel bearing race. Step 10. Install the self-aligning spacer and spindle nut. Step 11. Tighten the spindle nut, usually left-hand threads. Step 12. If a hubless rotor is being machined, be sure to thoroughly clean the inside surface. Step 13. Also remove all rust from the other side of the hubless rotor. Step 14. Select the proper centering cone for the hole in the center of the hub. Step 15. Select the proper size cone-shaped hubless adapter and the tapered centering cone with a spring in between. Step 16. After sliding the rotor over the centering cone, Install the matching hubless adapter. Step 17. Install the self-aligning spacer and spindle nut. Step 18. After the rotor has been secured to the brake lathe spindle, install the noise silencer band, or dampener. Step 19. Carefully inspect the cutting bits and replace, if necessary. Step 20. Loosen the tool holder arm. Step 21. Adjust the twin cutter arm until the rotor is centered between the two cutting bits. Step 22. Turn the lathe on. Step 23. Move the cutter arm toward the center of the rotor, placing the cutting bits in about the center of the friction surface. Step 24. Turn one cutting bit into the surface of the rotor to make a scratch cut. This step checks the lathe setup for accuracy. Step 25. Turn the lathe off. Step 26. Observe the first scratch cut. Step 27. Loosen the spindle retaining nut. Step 28. Rotate the rotor 180 degrees, or one half turn, on the spindle of the brake lathe. Step 29. Tighten the spindle nut. Step 30. Turn the lathe back on and turn the cutting bit slightly into the rotor until a second scratch cut is made. Step 31. If the second scratch cut is in the same location as the first scratch cut or extends all around the surface of the rotor, then the rotor is properly installed on the lathe. Step 32. Start the machining process by moving the twin cutters to about the center of the rotor friction surface. Step 33. Turn the cutting bits inward until they touch the rotor and zero the depth adjustment. Step 34. Adjust the twin cutters, then dial in the amount of depth, 0.005 to 0.010 of an inch per side for a rough cut or 0.002 of an inch for a finish cut, and lock the adjustments so that vibration will not change the setting. Step 35. Turn the feed control knob until the desired feed engages the automatic feed. Rate is achieved for the first or rough cut, 0.0062, 0.010 of an inch per revolution, or finish cut, 0.002 of an inch per revolution. Step 36. Engage the automatic feed. Step 37. Observe the machining operation. Step 38. After the cutting bits have cleared the edge of the rotor, turn the lathe off and measure the thickness of the rotor. Step 39. Readjust the feed control to a slow rate, 0.002 of an inch per revolution or less, for the finish cut. Step 40. Reposition the cutting bits for the finish cut. Step 41. Loosen the adjustment locks. Step 42. Turn the depth of the cut for the finish cut, 0.002 of an inch maximum. Step 43. Lock the adjustment. Step 44. Engage the automatic feed. Step 45. Use 150 grit aluminum oxide sandpaper on a block of wood for 60 seconds per side on a grinder to give a non-directional and smooth surface to both sides of the rotor. Step 46. After the sanding or grinding operation, thoroughly clean the machine surface of the rotor to remove any and all particles of grit that could affect the operation and life of the disc brake pads. Step 47. Remove the silencer band. Step 48. Loosen the spindle retaining nut and remove the rotor. On the vehicle lathe. Step by step. Step 1. Prepare to machine a disc brake rotor using an on the vehicle lathe by properly positioning the vehicle in the stall and hoisting the vehicle to a good working height. Step 2. Remove the wheels and place them out of the way. Step 3. Remove the disc brake caliper and use a wire to support the caliper out of the way of the rotor. Step 4. Measure the rotor thickness and compare it with factory specifications before machining. If a disc hard thickness is specified, be sure to allow an additional 0.015 inch for wear. Step 5. Install the hub adapter onto the hub and secure it using the wheel lug nuts. Step 6. Engage the drive unit by aligning the hole in the drive plate with the raised button on the adapter. Step 7. Use the thumb wheel to tighten the drive unit to the adapter. Step 8. Attach a dial indicator to a secure part on the vehicle and position the dial indicator on a flat portion of the lathe to measure the lathe runout. Step 9. Rotate the wheel or turn the lathe motor on and measure the amount of runout. Step 10. Use a wrench to adjust the runout using the four numbers stamped on the edge of the drive flange as a guide. Step 11. After the hub runout is adjusted to 0.005 inch or less, remove the dial indicator from the vehicle. Step 12. Using a T-handle Allen wrench, adjust the cutter arms until they are centered on the disc brake rotor. Step 13. Move the cutters to the center of the rotor. Step 14. Adjust the cutter depth until each cutter barely touches the rotor. Step 15. Position the cutters to the inside edge of the rotor surface and adjust the cutters to the desired depth of cut. Step 16. Adjust the automatic shutoff so the lathe will turn itself off at the end of the cut. Step 17. Turn the lathe on by depressing the start button. Step 18. Monitor the machining operations as the lathe automatically moves the cutters from the center toward the outside edge of the rotor. Step 19. After the lathe reaches the outside edge of the rotor, the drive motor should stop. Step 20. Measure the thickness of the rotor after machining to be certain that the rotor thickness is within service limits. Step 21. The technician is using 150 grit aluminum oxide sandpaper and a wood block for 60 seconds on each side of the rotor to provide a smooth surface finish. Step 22. After completing the machining and resurfacing of the rotor, unclamp the drive unit from the hub adapter and clean the rotor. Step 23. After the drive unit has been removed, remove the lug nuts holding the adapter to the rotor hub. Step 24. After removing the hub adapter, the caliper can be reinstalled. Step 25. Be sure to torque the caliper retaining bolts to factory specifications. Step 26. Install the wheel and wheel cover. On this vehicle, the wheel cover must be installed before the lug nuts because the lug nuts hold the wheel cover on the wheel. Step 27. Always use a torque wrench or a torque limiting adapter with an air impact wrench as shown here when tightening lug nuts. Step 28. Pump the brake pedal several times to restore proper brake pedal height. Check and add brake fluid as necessary before moving the vehicle. Review questions. Question 1. Explain the difference between machine to specifications and discard. Question 2. List the steps for machining a brake drum. Question 3. Describe how to measure a disc brake rotor for lateral runout and thickness variation. Question 4. List the steps for machining a disc brake rotor. Question 5. Describe what is necessary to achieve like new disc brake rotor finish. Chapter Quiz. Question 1. Brake drums use what for the friction surface area? A. Cast iron. B. Aluminum. C. Steel. D. Carbon. Question 2. Technician says that hard spots in a brake drum should be removed using a carbide tip machining tool. Technician B says that the drum should be replaced if hard spots are discovered. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 3. The major reason for brake pedal pulsation during braking is due to A. Grooved rotors. B. Excessive rotor thickness variation. C. Thin rotors. D. Poor surface finish on the rotors. Question 4. After machining a rotor, what should be done? A. Installed on the vehicle. B. Clean the rotor with soap and water. C. Rub the machined surface with a brake pad to burnish the surface. D. Use new lug nuts when installing on the vehicle. Question 5. Typical maximum rotor thickness variation, parallelism, specifications is A. 0.0003 to 0.0005 inch, 0.008 to 0.013 millimeters. B. 0.003 to 0.005 inch, 0.08 to 0.13 millimeters. C. 0.030 to 0.050 inch, 0.8 to 1.3 millimeters. D. 0.300 to 0.500 inch, 8.0 to 13 millimeters. Question 6. Typical maximum rotor runout specifications are A. 0.0005 of an inch, or 0.013 millimeters. B. 0.003 to 0.008 of an inch, or 0.08 to 0.13 millimeters. C. 0.030 to 0.050 of an inch, or 0.8 to 1.3 millimeters. D. 0.300 to 0.500 of an inch, or 8.0 to 13 millimeters. Question 7. Rotor finish is measured in A. Millimeters. B. Inches. C. Micro inches. D. Centimeters. Question 8. The lower the RA of the rotor, the what the surface? A. Smoother. B. Rougher. C. Higher. D. Lower. Question 9. The brake length arbor should be checked using A. A. Feeler gauge. B. Vacuum gauge. C. Thread pitch gauge. D. Dial indicator. Question 10. A disc brake rotor is being machined. Technician says that the rotor says that a feed rate of 0.0008 inch per revolutions and 150 RPM is where the rotor should be set for a final cut. Technician B says that the rotor should be given a non-directional surface. Finish using 150 grit sandpaper. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. End of chapter 108.